people.
Don't you know?
Places.
Don't you know?
Events.
Don't you know?
From the campus of Winona State University, KQAL-FM is proud to present...
Don't you know?
This week on Don't You Know, we met with author Gary Hoffman at the Marine Art Museum in Winona, Minnesota. Gary is the author of Mighty Miss, a memoir about a 45-day trip Gary made with his son down the Mississippi River. Tune in now for a high-water adventure that will take your breath away. I'm Lisa Ostrander, and this is...
Gary Hoffman. Yeah, actually, I'm from the Chanhassen area now, and... I worked 20 years as a teacher for the Minnetonka schools, doing English and speech and theater, directing plays, and then 14 of those years I was working with at-risk youth. And then I went into full-time church ministry the latter part of my life, spent the last 20-some years doing that, and actually took an early retirement to finish up this book, Mighty Miss, and I'm happy I did.
Fantastic. Where or when did you become interested in the outdoors?
Oh boy, I was a very little boy. I actually remember my dad bringing back a World War II pup tent and setting it up in the backyard, and I got my own army blanket from him and rolled it up, and then I would go out and pretend I was camping out, and I would wander around town. Sometimes my parents wondered where I was. But actually from the very earliest times I can remember, I was an outdoors kind of person.
When did you take the trip?
It was in 2002, but I just refused to speak about it until I was done with the book. We left on Memorial Day weekend, and we were finished around the 15th of July.
Where exactly did your trip begin and end?
Well, we did start at the headwaters, the paddling, and go all the way to Jackson Square Landing in New Orleans. So we spent about 45 days on the river, averaged about 50 miles a day. We actually started the trip at the Red Lake Indian Reservation, and we were giving a smudging and a blessing there, using sweet grass and eagle's feathers and the whole works and the drums, the drumming. It was a blessing and praying for a safe journey for us. And it was because we were representing part of an endowment campaign for a school at the mission that this took place. And we carried the Red Lake Nation flag with us all the way down. And the decals on the canoe are of the Red Lake Nation. It was kind of a good social experience.
So tell us briefly about your trip on the Mississippi.
Briefly? 45 days.
Yeah. Who you went with, yeah. And kind of what made you decide that you wanted to take the trip. And
right. Well, actually, it was a dream from... the first time that I went to the headwaters of the Mississippi when I was a little boy. But I verbalized it back in about 72 to my wife. We were sitting on the banks of the Mississippi, and a couple guys went by, and we asked them the usual, where are you headed? And they said, down to New Orleans, where'd you start? And the whole works, you know. And I turned to her and I said, someday I'm going to make that trip. But we had two children at the time, and we wanted to have more, and I wasn't sure if it would ever come true. But my son, Darren, when he was beginning his career in the Army, he said, when my 4-year hitch is up, if you still want to do that Mississippi trip, I'll do it with you. And he was a Ranger, and so he was getting lots of good training. And I said yes to that, and he was as good as his word. So 4 years later, when he got out, we went down the river.
Fantastic. And why did you decide to write a book about this trip?
Well, you know, and that's a good question, because I never set out to. I did keep a journal because I wanted to know what was going on, to be able to look back at it. And then when I had the near-death experiences, and again, remember, I've been guiding for 45 years at different times, and some of the things that were written, and we read several books before going down, and we found some of the information wrong. And I decided I wanted to correct that, number one, but also I wanted to warn people about some dangers that no one else had talked about. So that's where the book got its impetus. And there were actually 6 near-death experiences on the river.
Would you like to share one of them with us?
Well, one of them dealt with crossing Lake Winnebagoche, which was about a 14-mile paddle for us. And we got caught in... the southwest winds were coming up trying to chase away Old Man Winter, and the northwest winds were still coming down, so those two winds were colliding on the lake, and we got caught in some 6-foot waves. Actually, it was the wind that initially pushed us out into the mass of water. And it wasn't until the next day when we had crossed safely that we found out about the two 19-year-old boys who had died the year before of hypothermia. Their life jackets were on. They literally washed ashore where we landed. Yeah. So it was kind of a sad experience for us to be told that after we had safely crossed.
What were some of the emotions that were going through your mind at that time?
It was such a struggle on the water that literally all I could think about was keeping us safe. And it was such a hard struggle that at first I didn't think I was even going to get a chance to drink water or eat anything. This is pretty brutal, paddling as hard as we were for about 3 hours. So we really needed some energy bars, and I was able to throw some to my son, and we made it.
That's always a good,
yeah,
answer.
And then the other part, you know, a couple of the experiences actually dealt with towboat operators who literally played chicken with us while we were on the water. Twice, we never capsized from what they did, but we filled up with water a couple times, almost to the top of the canoe.
And did you know about any of this before you left for the trip?
No, nobody had written anything about this, and I've come to find out that it's not uncommon for towboat operators. I don't know if they're just bored on the river, but they do play games with smaller boats and canoes, unfortunately. And I do have a buddy who was racing down the river who actually panicked and abandoned his canoe, and it was run over by a towboat. And then the towboat stopped and picked him and his buddy up, but there was no need for it.
And how do you think, how did Boy Scouts play a role in your...
Well, Boy Scouting was just a natural for me because I love the outdoors and I joined the Scouts. And when I was going to college, I was invited to become an assistant scoutmaster of a troop. And again, because I was interested in the outdoors. And then when I graduated from college, they invited me to become a scout executive. And I thought, oh, great, I'm going to be camping and canoeing all the time. Well, as a scout executive, you're doing all the bookwork kind of stuff and training of adults and never getting to take the kids out much. So that's why I left scouting and went into teaching. Wanted to work with the kids.
What was a key significant moment in your trip for you, a moment that just kind of stuck with you as a very powerful moment?
Well, definitely when we finished the 14 miles across Lake Winnebogoch, and I was very teary at that point in time. And like I say, I wanted to get down on my knees and kiss the earth, but it was raining so hard, it was just muddy, 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 and I wasn't dumb enough to do that. And I think the other thing were just the beautiful people that we met along the river and how kind and good they were to us. Very moving, very moving. And nature. Nature is just so spectacular in the valley. It's just unbelievable. It's almost impossible to explain. I tried to do 288 pages, and maybe I got a little bit of it.
How about the physical strain? How was some of the heavy-duty work for you?
Well, you know, and everybody wonders about the canoeing end of it, but canoeing for me is like walking down the street. I'm that relaxed about it. So if I'm paddling, it's like I'm walking. So it's not a great stress. It's when my posture gets wrong that it starts to throw off some part of my body. But the strain of not being 29 years old, and I was 58, so it took a lot out of me. I had that strain in my right shoulder, and I thought because of the pain shooting down my arm that it might be a heart attack, but I found out later it was caused by the stress, both the emotional stress and the physical stress. And I, you know, I tell people just about every canoe trip, by the time they get to St. Louis, they make a decision whether they're going to continue or not. So no matter how good of friends you are when you start, you get angry after a while because you think, why is that other person always telling me what to do? Or I'm getting tired of living that close to them.
How did your relationship with your son change throughout the trip and at the end of it?
Well, I think throughout the trip, there was the stress there of the young marriage, and that made it harder. So had he not been married, probably we would have felt a lot less stress. But being 28, 29 years old, you know, and you are in charge of your own life, and you're not too interested in dad telling you what to do. And in an emergency situation, I would call out an order to him. And he'd sometimes turn back and he'd say, I'm tired. I don't want any more sergeants in my life. So cut it out, you know. So when you're living 24/7, you're within 10 feet of each other in the canoe. When you eat a meal, you're usually within 2 feet of each other. And when you're sleeping in the tent, you're within a foot of each other. That's 24/7 for 45 days. It can be a challenge with all the other stress. At the end of the trip, he flew back and I drove back with my brother. And I think it was about a month before we got back together again.
Do you feel that your relationship has changed since the experience?
Oh, absolutely. I think he's become more independent because of the trip, just asserting his own manhood, which he should be doing. It was the right thing to happen. You know, you don't have to be beholden to dad all your life. Even if he's in charge of the canoe trip, you can still tell him off.
How about one downfall of the trip or bad experience that you can remember?
I think it really threw me for a loop when that woman who was biking pulled up and started chewing me out for not having a long sleeve shirt on and long pants, because I wear shorts and short sleeve shirt and wear 50 sunblock. But she felt in no uncertain terms that I was wrong and that I should listen to her, and she wanted to be my mother. And I thanked her for her advice. I think the towboat operator playing chicken with us, I did not expect, in having that towboat ground and almost flatten us in our tent that night. Those are things that shouldn't have happened. It's just fortunate that those people are less than 0.5%, because the other 99.5% of the people are just great, wonderful people. And then, you know, missing being home after a while. You're out there that long and under that stress, and you say, oh, it'd be so much better back at home, you know.
What sort of other people did you run into on the river?
There was one really interesting experience in Cape Girardeau. In Cape Girardeau, they have this flood wall that keeps the river from inundating the town, I suppose, every other year, because they're really low there. At any rate, on the river side of the flood wall, they have a set of stadium-type seats. And there's a wharf there, so a steamboat can pull up, and you could have a preacher get out and preach, or you could have a show or whatever. And I was sitting there, and my son was talking to a biker, so I was sitting by myself. And a woman entered the seawall, and she was probably in her mid-30s. And she looked around, she saw the canoe, and then she looked over and she saw me, and she came directly over to me. And she sat down 2 seats away from me. She was dressed very modestly, and she didn't look at me, she just looked straight ahead. And she started to talk to me. And I thought, okay, this is interesting, where is this leading? And the next thing I know, she began to tell me her life story, a part of it, which was sad. She was in counseling. And her counselor had advised her to write everything down on paper, come down to the Mississippi, rip it up, and throw it into the river, and see all of her troubles drowned and washed into the ocean. And she chose me almost like a witness to this, so that she shared with me what she was doing, why she was doing it. She shared with me how her husband had run off with a 17-year-old chickie, and she was left with 2 daughters, and how difficult it was. And so she'd written down the pain. She had a great counselor. She had a lot of good friends supporting her. And so I got to be her witness. And the funny part about it was when she stood up she ripped it all up, and she stood up and she started to walk toward the river, and she turned around, she looked back at me, and she said, oh, Gary, don't worry. My troubles are going to be far ahead of yours and Darren's. And I thought, I didn't tell you any of my troubles. So she was very perceptive, and just knowing, you know, when people are on the river that long, the tensions that set in. But to have somebody come, you know, as a minister, I'm used to people calling me up and saying, can I come over and sit and talk? I say, yeah, but I was a dirty, grubby person on the river, and this woman sat down next to me and began talking to me and sharing things that were very personal.
What was one of the biggest things for you that you learned from the trip?
I think the spirituality. I did not expect to see as much beauty in the valley as I did. That really surprised me. There were times when the perfume from the basswoods would be so overwhelming that you would just smell it for a couple miles. You know, there'd be all these basswoods. And there would be other spring things that were in bloom the same way. So the perfumes were really an unexpected delight. And then seeing the ferns when they're first coming up, the fern fiddleheads, and then some of the ferns were already big fronds. And there would be like this whole section, and it reminded me of some of the specialty greenhouses in the Twin Cities area. You go in and you see the same flower, you know, and it's throughout the whole greenhouse. And so it was like seeing a greenhouse full of young plants. And that too was real special. And the herds of deer that would come down to the river, and of course the eagles, that was really, to see 15 bald eagles in one white pine tree was absolutely outstanding. And then to watch them, they're sitting up there in the branch, you know, and their heads are moving, they're watching for fish swimming so they can swoop down and get them. Unfortunately, we never saw one take off, but we got to watch them scan the waters a lot. That was good. One of the saddest things, really, was the end of the trip. When we landed at Jackson Square Landing, basically, Jackson Square Landing is the home, or was the home at that time, to about 20 to 30 street kids. And these kids were anywhere from age 11, 12, up to about 17. And they kind of hung around together. There was one funny incident. They all came down and they wanted to help us out and be helpful. And this one guy says, "Hey man," he says, "I'll help you carry the stuff up to the top." And I looked at him and I said, "Do you think I just got off the boat or what?" And he didn't get it, you know. He didn't know the expression at all. But I knew that once it got up to the top, it would disappear into the crowd of people. So I told him, "No." I said, "I'm going to look for my brother, and he's going to help me carry this." "Hey, man, I'll take care of it for you while you're gone." And I said, "No, my son over there will." And Darren stood up, and he's 6'3". And he, like I say, was just out of the military, so he still had that military demeanor. And the guy says, "Oh, okay." But yeah, but it was sad because, and we did, we gave them some of our equipment and sleeping pads and things like that. I don't know what happened in their lives, but it wasn't a very pleasant life that I could see at that point in time. Made me appreciate my life a lot more, too. And I did. I worked with at-risk kids for 12 years, basically, and I did support groups for 17 years for kids who were using chemicals. So I knew immediately, could see some of the problems, and you just wish you could help every kid, but you can't.
What message would you like the readers to take from your book?
I'd like people to walk away and say, "Hey, I could do that," whether it's going